I'm freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Go
fuck yourself.
And I am a sports entertainer.
Welcome, everybody, to Eat Sleep Elite. I'm one of your hosts, Charlie. Joined as always by my good brother, the ultimate, the Duke of Derbs. Joined as always by Bane Duke. How you doing, Duke?
I am the Lord Ruler of the podcast.
And I am the vegan. No.
I am the learning tree.
It's this AEW Dynasty 2025 post show, the second annual AEW Dynasty event. And like always,
Charlie, why are you angrily pissed off and fucking shouting from the rooftops about how horrible the main event was?
I'm sure that's what some people are expecting, right? No, as always with AEW, we had some incredible wrestling tonight. And yeah, I guess let's just kind of jump right into it. Let's just jump right into the show. All right, let's just go. Right off the gate, we opened up with Zero Hour, and I think, is this fair to say, Duke? Or is this the best Zero Hour you can recall?
No.
In terms of there's matches?
There's been ones with multiple good matches. There was only like two on this one, and there's been ones where they had three or four, and all three or four of the matches, we were like, wow, that was way better than I was expecting. So I can't ever recall
a Zero Hour match hitting to the point that I liked these
ones. I think
you
don't ever care about them, and neither do I, but I mean, like, to be fair, I don't think anybody should, because they usually never lead to anything, but I mean, like, you know, they're usually capping off a feud that just didn't make the pay-per-view, essentially, like, which, or sometimes they're just thrown together. I don't even know why they put them on sometimes. I mean, I don't want 2 hours of pre-show. Maybe they should shorten the pre-shows just a tad and then add a little bit more in terms of, like, if they're going to do pre-show matches. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I mean, is that something that you think a pay-per-view needs for the crowd to get warmed up? Like, I don't even know.
It definitely is, yes. You want your crowd, you want them to get warmed up. That is a thing. That is why these Zero Hours are so great. And to me, this going forward is going to be the gold standard of Zero Hour. I am going to compare every Zero Hour to this. So we have Crew and Nick Wayne taking on defeating Top Flight. I said defeating. This is going to happen a couple of times. It's been a long day, people. Defeating Top Flight and AR Fox. Now, what has AEW perfected? What is the one thing they perfected since the jump? That's party matches, right? This was a party match to the T. Every single person looked like a star. Everyone got their shit in. This might be the best I've seen AR Fox yet in terms of truly unleashed in this company. He's done some great stuff, but it's always in these party matches where we like him the most. And he legit got the floor here and, like, got the chance to shine and run wild for about 60 seconds. It was truly, truly great stuff from AR Fox. Crew came out in their ridiculous getup that I love, and I eat it up so much. Nick Wayne just announced for the Super Juniors yesterday, 2 days ago, and now he is got this more energy to him, right? And he's walking to the crowd, you know, when he's walking out and he's mewing, and it's Nick Wayne, he's scaring kids by jumping up next to him. I thought Dante and Darius looked really good with their new getup that they were rocking. Layla looked good as always. Kip Sabian looked good as always. Mother Wayne got her stuff in. This was, to me, in terms of a zero-hour party match, as perfect as it probably could be. So if you guys did skip Zero Hour, for the first time ever, I'm actually going to recommend both matches. They were that good. Other than that, Duke, what'd you think of the match? Do you think anything going forward, is Top Flight maybe going to actually be a trio with AR Fox? Do you think Top Flight and Crew continue?
It's the only
based
consistent
on how this ended?
Yeah, it's the only consistent trios partner they've had. So, I mean,
recently.
Well, no, I'm saying, like, throughout their whole time since he's been here, like, ever since, like, they've had other tag partners, but they always go off and do something else. So, including Andretti. So, you know, like, I don't know. It's not like something I'm like locked to, because I think, I mean, I guess they had Matt Sydal for a while, excuse me,
yeah,
but even he went off and did his own thing with Christopher Daniels eventually, so.
Dante Martin was considering himself one-third of Top Flight when they were teaming with Andretti, so Yes. It's just, it's one of those things, you know, I always feel like they are trying to find that slot.
I think A.R. Fox fits, and certainly there's not anything else for A.R. Fox to do. So, unfortunately, like, he's really good, but they just know there's not enough space on the card a lot of the time. So, like, but I did really enjoy this match. Yeah. I thought Nick Wayne was super in his bag in this match.
Oh, yes.
The Wayne's World he hits in this match is, like, pretty good. He's hit some better ones, but, like, this was a really good spot, I thought, for the finish. And, I mean, obviously there was that, like, sequence with A.R. Fox, where he was just, like, hitting every move in the fucking goddamn book. And
which set up the Leo Rush sequence. Oh. And that's just, it's so good, man. That's that. And the crowd, that's they're what, winning the crowd Leo, over I've, on the pre-show.
Like, Leo, I've realized that's what he's really good at. You set him up big. Like, you have him sell for, like, the first several minutes of a match. And he will give you one of the best comeback sequences, even if he's going to lose, that you will see in any match. And you'll believe that he's got a chance to win, which is wild.
Like, absolutely.
But, yeah. So, Dante also, I thought, really, I'm probably echoing all the same things you said, but Dante also really stood out to me here. I feel like this was the first time in a long time I've seen Dante really stand out in these matches, you know, and that's not to say Dante is not still Dante. I just feel like he's been missing something for a while, ever since they kind of got sort of delegated to the, like, almost like mid card of the tag division, if you will, like, if such a thing exists, you know, like. They're to the point where, like, if they got banished to Ring of Honor, it wouldn't blow my mind. So I really think that this will hopefully help them to get back on the map. That would be really nice.
Yeah.
Crew, weirdly, have established themselves really quickly in AEW, and I'm really excited to see what they do with that. Do you think this actually does anything for Nick Wayne's profile? Like, I'm curious.
Just in terms of the getting the pay-per-view match, or the Super Juniors, or just kind of all of it?
I mean, the Super Juniors is obviously going to help him
in
that way. But I mean, like, I just mean in, like, with a, like, will this, will, by the time he gets back, like, he's obviously going to disappear for, like, a month or whatever for the Super Juniors.
It does feel like he's trending up. And I think that's a really, really good sign for someone so young.
You think he'll get, like, a good reaction when he comes back from Super Juniors, is, I guess, my question, you know, like.
Depends on the crowd. Is it a crowd that watches Japan? Do you throw him back on a pay-per-view? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Just like Jack, you know.
100%.
When you threw him back in the right spot, you know?
Jack was going for a while, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Max Caster's Open Challenge. This has been such a great ongoing segment. Every single time. I was trying to describe to one of our friends that doesn't really watch wrestling anymore, like, what Max is doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of can't. I was like, it's a version of a chicken shit heel, but with his own spin on it.
Yes.
Like, it just works. It gets the crowd to react every time.
It's like a chicken shit heel that's also super arrogant or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Which has been done before, but the way he's doing it is unique. Like,
yeah, and it's really nice. And
I gotta say, it surprises the shit out of me. He completely has pivoted his gimmick. He was a rapper that would come down to the ring rapping, and now he's not rapping at all. He comes down to the ring and cuts pretty decently good promos against the crowd. Gets the crowd going really well, especially tonight. Oh my god, he's fucking eating out of Max's hand. And that shows you how good this has been. The crowd has been building up to this moment. And the fact that this wasn't on the main show might actually be a mistake because of how good a reaction they were getting.
Yep.
That being said, I will say, that was my biggest concern with this whole breaking up the Acclaim thing that was just coming out of nowhere, it almost felt like, right? Was, what is Max going to do? Will Max be okay on his own?
Can he swim with the sharks?
I think he can, and I think this fucking segment right here proves it. And so I got to say, I'm so impressed with him with this, because he got the crowd, like I said, eating out of his hand, and it was fucking brilliant. And then I'll let you get to what happens next. But, you know, the anticipation that was built up, the tension when he was about the way we were like, he's drawing it out and drawing it out before we revealed who he was going to be facing. And I got to tell you, when we found out who he was facing, I was not more ready for something to happen in AEW for a long time. So this was a long time.
Absolutely.
Coming. We got
favorite
here.
Moment of the year, I think, so far for me. I'm probably
going
to update my,
that's going
my
into
awards
rankings,
the next couple days. And I think this is, as of April, is my favorite moment of the year. So let's just do it. The lights go out. We're kind of thinking one of two things: Josh Alexander's debut or Anthony Bowens' return, right? But Bowens has been quiet. We haven't heard anything, you know, this, that. It's been a lot of thing. We hear new theme music, which is Underground by the band Jane's Addiction. And video pops up. The five-tool player, pyro, ring gear, is Justin announces him as the pride of pro wrestling. Anthony Bowens has arrived, joined by Billy Gunn. Yes, they're keeping the pairing. Massive fucking reaction. You can feel the fucking just all of it. Everyone wants to root for Anthony Bowens. He has everything you want in a fucking wrestler. He is so, so good. And he finally shows up, beats Max Caster in 40 seconds. Bowens just hit the reverse leg lariat, roaring elbow, one very quick. He hugged Gunn. Commentary talked about how that was years of frustration behind that elbow, and just I love this. This was so good. Duke, the five-tool player, the pride of pro wrestling, and he already feels like a big star, and we know he can back it up in the ring. We know 100%. He can back it up in the mic.
100%. I got to tell you, I have said for a while on this podcast, it's been a while because Anthony Bowens has obviously been off TV for a while. While this has been setting up, I have said the entire time that if you make Anthony Bowens and you turn him into a big star and he becomes this big representative of the LGBT community for AEW, which he already is, by the way, like, to be clear, but like if you center him as like a potential main event world champion with that energy and that sort of not in a way that is like forced and like corporate, but like in a way that is meaningful to both Bowens and the people that are, you know, looking up to him as a representation of them in pro wrestling, right? I've said for the entire time, if they do that, I will be so fast a fucking fan that he's gonna shoot up my list. And I told you when his music hit and he came out, I said instantly top five favorite fucking wrestler in AEW for me.
Yes,
right now,
dude! Yes, I love this fucking guy, man.
And so, I mean,
I'm getting some fucking goosebumps just thinking about it, dude.
I know.
This
might have been one of the best things on the show, straight up. Like, I mean, honestly, like, it was. Yes. It might be my favorite moment of the night for sure. Like, this was.
No, I'm not even kidding. This is my favorite moment of the year so far. Yeah, genuinely, it is that high for me right now. Like, when we talk about moments that make us, it's all about how it makes us feel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our favorite movies, all of this is how it makes us feel. And I just, I was so excited and happy for Bowens and all of the above. Yeah, let's jump into this. And I do think we can say this right now too. This was such a big thing. I'm glad they waited until like most people were in the arena. I don't know the exact time, but I think it was like 15 minutes before the show started.
Yeah.
So it did feel like it was on the card.
They stretched. They even made jokes about having to stretch. I think that's why they were doing that. Yeah. They were stretching until more people got into the arena. So there was a long segment.
It did feel like
match.
It was on the pay-per-view, but there's always the technicality. It was the pre-show. But
yes.
Let's jump into the actual card then. The old DVDs wouldn't have the pre-show, so that's why it's always fun to kind of point that out.
Indeed.
All right. So the actual card, we open up. If we had one guess who was opening it, you're probably going to say it was Will Ospreay, and you would have been correct. As always, Will Ospreay opens our show. You can't kick a show off better than for him. He's wrestling Kevin Knight. Commentary, Jim Ross was on the call, and he briefly kind of mentions, you know, how Knight's someone that was newer to New Japan, but he mentions, you know, how big it is that he was a champion in New Japan, that he was in the Super Juniors, this, that, and the other. Why?
By the way, I just want to point out to everybody, this guy was in the tournament that I always like to reference. So
yes.
Just throwing that out yes. there. And by the way, his matches in that tournament were fucking great. He didn't win a lot. I don't remember him winning a lot, but he was in there. Him and his partner.
Yep. And
were they tag champions at the time? Is that why they were in there?
Might have been tag champions at the time, yeah. Him and Kushida, of course.
I believe so. Intergalactic Jet Setters, right?
So right away with Kevin Knight, in Japan, one of the things we've always mentioned with him was his athleticism. Well, so you jump into AEW now, and you go against Will Ospreay, and this son of a bitch can hang with Will Ospreay in terms of being an athlete in the ring, which means he's on par with Takeshita, which means he's S tier in terms of athleticism. He did everything you probably could while losing the match to elevate your stock. Good for him. I can't wait to see the future of him. This match was fucking awesome. This was just was the perfect opener to the show. And at, again, at this point, dude, I am riding such a high. I really enjoyed tonight. Let me just get that out of the way. I really enjoyed tonight. And when we're kicking it off like this, I think I was already penciling in pay-per-view of the year.
I'm having a hell of a fucking day, bro. And the same fucking day, I fucking secured a fucking Don Ross fucking Josh fucking Downs card, and I got fucking the Swerve main event nonsense that we're going to talk about.
Oh, dude, yes. One of the main cornerstones throughout this match, and I'm going to toss it to you in a second here,
of course,
was just a Kevin Knight trying to out showcase him a little bit, and Ospreay having to bring him back down. But it was, they went to this like three or four times, and Kevin kept countering the Styles Clash. He did it so good, and he changed it up every time. That
is this a hint about who's potentially coming to AEW?
Imagine. But that is, again, when we talk about Shibata's teachings, right?
Shibata da da da.
It's the technicality all of these guys have that came from his class. They're all so good technically, but it just, you don't always know it because, you know, it's just not the style of match that they're going for. But after they're all just showing off their shit, he's mixing it up with some fucking good technicality stuff. And I'm like, dude, I love this fucking guy. Ospreay eventually hit the Styles Clash.
Dude, I love about that with Shibata too. He trained the next generation of not just New Japan talent, but also AEW talent, and just walked away and said, "Nah, I'm just gonna go wrestle my career now. I'm good. Yeah. I did it. And I, my next
and
good,
even so one there's even one out. Cat in NXT. So
now I'm gonna spend my career wrestling the guys I trained and just have 5-star matches. Let's go.
This New Japan class might be the future of the business. This LA Dojo class."
Like, do you think that, like, in the New Japan circles, they'll talk about that class in the same breath?
Yes, I do think they will.
With the one with Brock Lesnar and all them in it? Because, like, that's, you know, that's only really happened once in recent history, and that's that class from WWE, right? Or from,
because if Gabe Kidd ends up becoming, you know, one of the top guys in the company, and Clark Connors keeps doing what he's doing, right? Drilla wasn't in the class, but, you know, you already had Coughlin, who was a pretty big star, but he had the retirement, you know, thing, so... Yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff about that. If you guys are ever curious, look up the LA Dojo class that Shibata trained. Really cool stuff. Hidden Blade got him the match. Duke, what'd you think of this? I mean, Ospreay goes on again, puts on an incredible match. Kevin Knight, the newest face to AEW. Just, yeah. What'd you think of all this one?
I am convinced at this point that Will Ospreay is going to go down as the greatest wrestler of all time. It is not even really a conversation I even want to have anymore at this point. Kenny will probably end up holding that title, similarly to like right now how I think Brian is kind of like the guy, you know, in a lot of people's mind now that he's gone. Like, he's probably like, if you really liked Brian in that style, you probably consider him at least of that style to be the GOAT, but maybe the GOAT of all of wrestling, because he's just been so good for so long. And when he came back, it's been so insane, his AEW run, all that, right? I think for me, it's shifting to Will now, because I don't know that I have ever seen somebody be as consistent at what Will does. I love Kenny. Kenny has had matches with people that couldn't keep up with him, and it didn't work out. It was still a good match, but it didn't, you know, he was carrying more than he was having an insane match. He can do that with Kenny. He can do it with guys like Ricochet. He can do it, I would assume, with Mike Bailey. He could do it with any of the guys that you want to throw him against. And now you throw in Kevin Knight, and it elevates Kevin Knight to a level that I don't think we expected this quickly in the company. Now, granted, circumstances happened that put him in this tournament that he would have otherwise not been in. But the ability for him to step up and grab at that, you know, brass, you know, proverbial brass wing, if you will. Brass wing? Brass ring. Now you send it to my way, Jesus. But, it's infected through the digital time stream. But anyway, Kevin Knight, obviously really great in this match. But Will Ospreay, I think, like I said, I think in my mind, he's moving into GOAT territory. I mean, how many more 5-star matches can this guy have before anyone can ever even have a hope of catching him? No one ever thought they were catching Misawa, and this guy fucking did it. So, you know, like, there's something about Will that I think has infected my brain, and I just... He's the one guy I want to see on every show. And when he's not there, I'm still fine with it because AEW puts on a great show. But man, talking about a guy that just brings it all together for me. And what a phenomenal match to open up the show for us. Jesus Christ.
100%. We jump into our AEW World Tag Team Championships, where we have the Hurt Syndicate defeat Big Bill and Brian Keith. Hurt Syndicate looking awesome as always, looking dominant. Big Bill, as we kind of were guessing, was able to get his shit in a little bit, and he did feel like he could hang with the guys. Really happy for Brian Keith. You know, I'm so glad that he's getting to a point where he's on pay-per-view, going for titles. It's just someone who's, you know, just really big fan of him, and I'm just happy with how far we've come. You know, whether it's in the learning tree or not, like we kind of said at the time, there was a lot of people that were like, really, you're sticking him in the Jericho Vortex? But we came on our show and we said, well, wait, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
He's going to get booked. Out for Daniel Garcia. Garcia's stock was mega elevated for me. Now, good Daniel gets there, he got put in the closet for a little bit, yes. But that was because Jericho was the main angle in that. It was never supposed to be Daniel, you know?
Yeah.
And Daniel got spots out of that where he won stuff. So, you know, like, it's
Brian's
like,
getting booked and he's not lost in the shuffle at all. Like, it's nice. It's really nice to see. And I don't want to take that for granted because...
Brian Keith always... shows up in like casino battle royals and stuff like that in singles still. It's not like he's been completely banished. Like he's just in the Jericho Vortex. Sometimes you get sucked up a little bit.
And that's fine. It's consistent booking. It gives you a chance to go out on TV and really make a name for yourself. And I think he's been doing that. Yeah, just a lot of big man fucking chicanery going on. MJF popped in the front row at one point, decked Bill with a dynamite diamond ring. Didn't make the Lashley or Benjamin too happy. Keith alone, he dropped a German suplex and huge spear. Benjamin got the pin. So another just strong title defense. Nothing too crazy. Any thoughts you had on this one?
Went way too long for my liking, I'll be honest. But I mean, you know, I like that these guys were able to get that kind of time on a pay-per-view. So I guess I can't really complain. Big Bill was perpetually going to be a tag team guy, huh? And isn't he never going to be able to make a singles run himself? Ugh.
I think there is a world where he can do the singles thing.
Do you remember the 4 weeks when Enzo was injured? How over he was as a singles wrestler?
Oh, yeah.
He can get there again. He just needs to be given the opportunity. So that's probably going to be a couple years down the road, I would think. I don't think he's going to be... For one, I think even if Brian Keith yeets out, I think he stays with Jericho beyond that.
I think it's one of those things, he's just so naturally good with tag partners that...
Yeah, I think him and Jericho could stick together. Like I said, even if Keith and him have a falling out and they kick him out of the Vortex or whatever, you know, he gets blown out of the Vortex at high speed.
And for better or for worse, Tony Khan always likes to book into people's strengths. And that could probably frustrate some people if maybe they don't want to be in the tag division, but he knows... what he's got out of Big Bill in the tag. And
I think Big Bill, given the fact that he was Enzo and him were on a trajectory to be multiple time tag team champions if things hadn't fallen apart, right? Like, I think he wants that legacy still. I don't necessarily think he wants to be just a tag team wrestler.
This is his third, at least that I can think of, unless there's someone I missed when he was an impactor. This is his third successful tag partner. So,
yeah.
That's good. Like,
that's a good track record in tag team wrestling. Not many people can team with more than one person and do well.
Yeah, what's one of the most underrated things about Chad Gable? He's on like four or five.
Think about that. He's been on two different, with completely different partners, with completely different gimmicks and styles, and completely different energy. He's been tag champions as a babyface and as a heel. So that just tells you everything you need to know right there. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, just throwing that out there, you know?
Yeah. Up next, we had our second Owen Hart Foundation quarterfinal. We had Mercedes Moné take on and defeat Julia Hart. This was pretty solid, right? Mercedes got her big pyro, and Taz fucking popped for that. He kind of shit himself a little bit. Harley Cameron was watching backstage, keeping an eye on what's going on with Mini Moné. A really fun story came out this week where Harley Cameron, I believe it was an interview, she said Mercedes actually came up with that gimmick once she heard Harley was a ventriloquist. Again, you got to love Mercedes because that also helped get Harley over even more. Mercedes is so good at this shit, man. She is so good. I'll let you take the lead here on this one. What'd you think of this match? And this match got some good time to it, too. So, yeah, what'd you think of our first Women's Owen Hart Cup Tournament quarterfinal match?
I thought it was a really solidly good match in the ring. I did enjoy this. Crowd genuinely was behind Julia in this match, too, which I was not necessarily expecting.
Julia!
Yeah, they were chanting for her, they were behind her, so I think it accomplished what they were trying to here. And I think as I was watching this, I started to see the vision a little bit more of what we were talking about on the podcast last night. You know, hey, I'm going to diabolically go on a tangent sometimes. Y'all just got to just let me cook sometimes. Sometimes I say some crazy shit that is actually pretty cool. So, you know, but anyway, yeah. So, you know, Mercedes ultimately does pick up the win here, but I mean, like yeah. it is, it was to be expected, you know, given that, they've been setting up Mercedes versus Athena for, you know, like almost going on a month now, it feels like, right. Or getting close. So, yeah. Or at least a couple
and,
of weeks.
And it can be the seeds were, if we wanted to, they were planted the day they announced All In Texas. So,
yep. So they could run that
seeds were planted.
Yep. They could run that match there regardless of what their plan is for either of them with this tournament, right? Like, say they're not going to win, no matter whether one, obviously one of them will have to advance through their match, right? But yeah, anyway, that being said, I really do wish that maybe they could have gotten a little bit more time. Like, maybe we'd shaved some time off the Hurt Syndicate match and gave it to this match, because I know Julia can cook. We've seen it before on pay-per-view against multiple opponents. So it'd be really cool to see her get back in her bag a little bit. But, you know, this was not the right the time. She'll have her moment later this year, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll be the one to beat Mercedes. You never know.
You never know.
She has been a TBS champion.
I think we'll notice something. I think there might have just been one or two too many matches on this show.
Yeah.
Because I do agree. I think this was one that probably...
And Mercedes, this is, I mean, all the matches she's had since she's been champion has begotten time right. pretty much. So it's
yeah, this,
weird,
this
you know?
Guy, this hit 13 minutes. It had good time. It's just, it could have hit that next level because the potential was there to, because around the, you know, 11 minute mark, it felt a little similar to me to the Statlander match where once they got going and they hit that next level, you know, they took it over 20. So yeah, I think it could have hit in that. There was a really good moment when Hart rolled through the moneymaker and hit a jackknife cover for two. And then they're like fighting each other for control and for position. And yeah, I just thought that was really good. I thought they brought a lot to this match. And she hit a cradle, got a flash pin for the victory here. And yeah, they were entirely rooting for Julia. So, you know, in terms of how you want to book this match, similar to Kevin, right? Do as much as you can, even if you're losing. I'd say both Julia and Kevin accomplished that tonight. So good for them. Mercedes moves on to the semifinal, which, look, Mercedes and Will Ospreay picking up victories. Okay, we got a big one here. Really big one. Death Riders defeat Rated FTR to retain the AEW Trios titles. And this was awesome. The match itself kicked fucking ass. We need our Trios titles to be defended. They should be shooting to be the every match in AEW should be shooting to be the best match on the show. But there should be something about being the Trios guys. You want to make this title matter. You want to make the Trios things be a thing in wrestling. Like, it should absolutely be with the way
there's especially. There's no excuse for it, if we're being completely honest. It's yes. all in how you stack your trios, right? And this has always yep. been the problem with six-mans, right? You can have a really normal six-man tag match that is just boring and it's got six people in it. And how you stack a trio to actually be a competitive trios division, you take a tag team, you add a really, really complimentary competitive wrestler who can then add in, like, a big, like, because what is the third wrestler in the trios match basically supposed to be? They're the hot tag. The other guys
usually
do their regular tag team wrestling.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you have two. But, like, think about it. It's a bonus hot tag, and it can be somebody's entire thing. Like, think about it. The way this works with FTR and Cope, FTR do their regular tag team wrestling for the majority of the match.
Yep, you got Dax starting the match doing all the big shit.
Yep, Dax sells.
You got Cash getting tagged in to get his shit in, yep, and then also take yep. some heat.
Oh,
and instead of switching it back to Dax, now yep. you get to tag in, oh, shit, we get the Hall of Famer. Boom.
Exactly.
Have fun.
So that's why Rated FTR works so well. And there's other trios I could make the same example. AR Fox and Top Flight. AR yep. Fox is able to contribute with some things that those two aren't able to do. I could run a whole list. So it's all in how you stack your trios. There's no excuse in AEW. We have phenomenally elite tag teams, you know, no, pun completely intended, right? And we have really solidly good single stars who are not able to be used right now in singles because every, you know, the other spots are currently, you know, being, you know, occupied. So there's really no excuse for it, you know, like, honestly.
And even when you're not keeping to that method, you have yes. great factions you can pick from. There's been multiple times, similar to the team they're facing a little bit, where it is just kind of three different tiered single stars. Like, it can be anything. And like you said, it's you just got to go get it, man, because you can do – there's so much you can do in these kinds of matches to keep people entertained. And I think the The one-on-one, we always like to point this out, the one-on-one that stuck out the most to me, Claudio and Dax. I've been a little harsh on Claudio recently. I haven't liked the direction they've been taking stuff in the Death Riders.
Battle of the Balds.
Yes, the Battle of the Balds. It worked. It's almost as good as the Battle of the Bastards, but, you know...
It's kind of the Battle of the Bastards, too.
A little bit. Between Claudio and Dax, I thought they really, really brought that strong style, and then the counters of the sharpshooters really stuck out to me. And, yeah, I just... This was a lot of fun. I thought Pack did great here as well. Wheeler, look at who's in the ring with. And guess who's getting the most reaction every time? Look, guys, you might not love it, but this is working with Wheeler Yuta. I mean, I don't think this is Stockholm Syndrome. It seems they've dropped that too, but I'm still going to give them shit for saying that. Wheeler Yuta's chasing greatness. Wheeler Yuta's getting the biggest reaction with Claudio Castagnoli.
Pack, that was a real 2014 FTR, TNA commentary type of moment, really.
Yeah, and Adam fucking Copeland. So, good for Yuta. I don't think there's much more, like, you could really point to, because he's getting that reaction. And if you want to try and compare it to something, because a lot of people say, well, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. I got to tell you, I really think it does. Like, it's more proof that it's working. Biggest shock of it all, Duke. We made jokes before this match started, and there's going to be some people that get this, so I'll keep it brief. This is similar to screenplay at the Oscars. Because one of the things we were saying last night is, if one goes down, chances are they all go down. But if one retains, oh shit, keep an eye out for Swerve.
This is the Timothy Chalamet winning at SAG of the AEW Dynasty show.
This is the Death Riders retained. And no, people, not because FTR turned on each other, which I think too still would have been the easiest thing you could have done, right? Because those have been the seeds. But also at the same time, FTR are such a brotherhood. They're such a core. If they were going to turn on each other, it would have had to been something really, really bad. And I don't think the seeds were planted enough for that just yet. But that could have happened over time, right? If you're going at it for 6-7 weeks against each other, well, maybe at that point you don't really give a fuck anymore. And whether you're brothers or not, you got it. You're either fighting or fucking. So you got to get it over with. Yuta hit Dax Harwood with the Psycho knee and got the fucking pin. Death Riders retain. We'll talk about what comes next in a second. Duke, the match, the result. And I think both of our tails were tucked after this because we kind of figured, uh-oh.
I was very shocked at the result. I was very much expecting this to finally be over and for us to be able to go into the next Dynamite excited to see multiple promos from new champions that are really exciting, you know. And
a coat promo with a championship again? Are you kidding me?
Come on, dude, man.
That's what energy. Would have been
energy
awesome.
Was there. And speaking of the energy, when Cope came out with the people singing with the crowd, it never gets old, man. But yeah, I mean, I did enjoy the match. I thought it was pretty good trios match. Probably one of the better ones in the Death Riders trios title reign. But
really hard hitting.
Oh, 100%, which is, you know, it's FTR, so you're going to get some of that. And Cope's been doing that in his run since he came back to the non-WWE.
Him and Mox
the
getting their shit kickers in.
100%. And yeah, so I don't know. I did enjoy this. I was really, really shocked by the result. I think I audibly went, huh? So I'll toss it back to you because let's get to the meat, if you will. Let's get to
so
the
if
sauce.
You're
going
to do a big, bold decision like that, right, you have to follow it up. And you're going to notice that's a trend tonight because you know your audience is going to be upset at that. How do you add in a layer? And as we always on this show call it, intrigue. So we'll just keep it simple. How do you add another layer of intrigue to really make people look past a decision that's going to upset them? Well, the Death Riders are celebrating back through the crowd. Wheeler's standing tall and Cope offers his hand to help Harwood up. They stand tall. They all look at each other for a second. Wheeler's about to leave, and Harwood lays out Adam Copeland with a pile driver. Uh-oh. Wheeler shitting himself, or Wheeler. Wheeler shitting himself a little bit. Hartwood grabs two chairs. He wants Cash to deliver a concerto. Cash shoves his partner down. Cash goes to help out Cope. And in this beautiful transition, you can feel it coming, but it doesn't matter. Because that beautiful transition, they hit the shatter machine. They hit a spike pile driver onto a chair. Harwood goes to finish the job. He stops him. Allow me. Concerto. Doctors are running to the ring. Wheeler says, no, no, no. I need another one for good measure. We're shooting the bodies. Boom! He puts on a neck brace. And instantly, Duke, it's like the gods ascended. FTR is back to being heels. And they slip right back in. It's like they just slip right back into those shoes. Their comedic timing is heels with the neck brace, the laying on the stretcher. These guys are so good. Dax is giving them chest compressions as Cash Wheeler's on the stretcher. They're shoving shit over. Wheeler goes to the doctors. Cope needs the brace more than he does. FTR walked to the back. Cope is loaded on the stretcher. Nigel McGuinness says FTR stands for fuck the rest. This was perfect in terms of a heel turn.
I've been calling absolutely for this turn for perfect. So long now. I could never have imagined it being as brilliant as it is, and that's how FTR gets you every time, because you can think it about, you can try and think it up, but Dax Harwood is a fucking brilliant wrestling mind that will beat you every time. And yeah, and I think he excels, and I think he kind of gets off on that a little bit about the, you know, the company better way than the fans can ever come up with.
Oh, yes, dude.
You know what I mean?
Does.
Like,
he
does. And so, you know, like, he absolutely has been thinking about this for maybe a couple of years now. Because there's been a couple of times where they thought about turning them heel, and you could tell. Yeah. It was kind of, they felt it out in the moment, and they were like, you know what? This is not the time to do this.
The babyface run was really needed once they re-signed. That, it 100%. Was needed.
Because there was no way after they re-signed, because everybody knew about it, and so everyone was excited that we got to keep them around for at least
their last ever contract. Yeah. That's 100%. That was the thing.
Yes, and so we're excited to see what they do with that. And this was needed. They needed to be heels again. And maybe we will eventually get to the point where they do actually face off with each other. They still have time left in the contract. But but maybe, you know, as much as I was intrigued by that, and you went to great lengths on our prediction show to explain why I thought that was the reason why they might not win here, I don't think that necessarily was something that I was super attached to as an idea, because I was really hoping they would ultimately win so that we could get away from this fucking Death Riders Trios reign, you know? But... you know, this is way better than anything I could have possibly. And AEW is really great at that. Let's be honest. There's so many shows where we walk into thinking, man, I don't know. I really don't want this to happen. And I kind of really don't want this to happen because it doesn't really make sense. Well, not only does it still make sense with what I was talking about, the reasons why being, it leans right into those reasons. And it says, you're right. That is something you should have been thinking about during this match, but it didn't end up affecting it. It ended up being a completely unrelated thing that ended up blowing up after everything went to shit, you know? So
it was such a good post-match angle.
One of the best recently, I gotta say.
It made me happy with the result. Because I will take this over the next 6 to 7 weeks of FTR trying to figure their shit out with Cope kind of babysitting. And then, you know, maybe they lose the titles and they turn on him then. Fuck that. Do it right now. Let's get Cope out of the way. Right? Because holy shit, Cope is going to need a partner. I applaud them for resisting the urge. Look, the selfish part of me was like, man, show Christian. No, save it. If you can save it.
No.
You hold that moment. Da. And then, so when Christian actually does show and help him, oh my God. This was truly, it made me, I've not been a fan of the Death Riders Trios title, but when the result happened, I'm like, oh God. When the post-match angle happened, I'm like, fuck it, I'm in. Let's do it. Let's do this thing. I've got no problem with that. Okay. So, that was a really big surprise on the night. And then let's jump into this. So we have Toni Storm taking on and defeating Megan Bain.
Did you think we had forgotten?
To retain the AEW Women's World title. This match was so fucking good. Megan Bain, if there was any doubt, you know, because she's been a little protected, right? We've seen her in tag matches. We've seen her in shorter matches. The one you can really point to is Statlander, where you were like, yeah, she's good. But that's only one match, right? It's only one match. Some stuff has been a little awkward, right? I mainly think of the chair thing and just little things like that. But that's just timing stuff. What's going to happen when we put her on pay-per-view? Oh, gee, she's going to have an incredible match with the ace of the women's division, Toni Storm, and Toni Storm's going to win the match by making her look like $1 million, because how does Toni Storm sell it? She literally sells it like she just stole victory. She has the perfect reaction. Megan Bain is pissed about it. Oh, man. Toni Storm, again, just keeping the title on her because of how great A, she is as a wrestler, and B, her character is. It's just, it makes a lot of sense. And during our Owen Hart predictions, we went over a lot, like, who can win? And every kind of person that you predict to win, it just feels like the better match is against Toni Storm. Now, I kind of got in my head a little bit these past, you know, past week. I've been really thinking, AEW's done this thing so many times where they strike when the iron's hot. You know, it can't hurt, right? It can't hurt to have Megan Bain be champion. Because if it doesn't work, fuck it. You take it off of her at Double or Nothing and you move on, right? We've seen this. It happens. What if she is a great champion? Well, then you just fucking, you struck gold already. But yeah, you know, I was hoping she would do that. But if you're going to go to the result that Toni Storm wins, at least make Megan Bain look good. And son of a bitch, Duke, this match was hard hitting. They brought all the A game. The interference spots with Luther and Penelope were great. Sweet Cheek music was great. Storm Zero was great. Bain kicks out at one, and then she does her thing. The F5 was countered into a small package, and it was just really, really good shit. What'd you think of this match? What'd you think of the result? Now, seemingly, Toni Storm losing the title is going to be at All In with this title.
Well, you know, we all know that Toni Storm knows how to handle a small package, being that she's with, you know, Juice Robinson. Ah, I'm just kidding. Anyway,
son of a bitch!
I'm going to get pissed on by Juice at a show now. But anyway, he's going to go over to my seat in the crowd and be like, I hate you! Anyway, that being said, no, really great, really great match. Like you said, I was anticipating this one a lot. I think I didn't realize there was going to be another women's match on the show, so I was kind of like, damn, they're really centering it all around this match. That could mean huge for this match in terms of time and just like what it could be. Yeah. The ultimate sort of like, you know, if you're ever going to have Toni Storm and David versus Goliath, this is one of the ones that you can do, and it's very convincing and interesting. And like I said, I don't think this hurts Megan Bain at all. So I think this accomplishes everything that you want it to. And Megan Bain looks like an absolute fucking stud look out there and fucking absolute behemoth. And I think Toni Storm proves that she's an intelligent wrestler, you know, that can get the dubs when she needs to, you know, against difficult opponents. I don't know. This one was just like, there was a lot on the show that was kind of like what I expected to happen. And this was one of those things that I expected to happen. Yep. So in my mind, I was like, yeah, this is exactly what I was expecting. Maybe not what happened in ring. I couldn't have told you what that was going to be, but you know, like the,
The results of the night, yeah, other than the Death Riders winning, they were very just kind of, you just really expected them, but there was a different to a lot of times, you know, we think maybe there's an opportunity to really change something. And, you know, now we get to see the timeline of what happens where Megan Bain isn't world champion. They didn't do this. I hope it doesn't end up being a thing where, you know, this is the highest she ever gets. I really hope that's not an actual thing. I hope, and I am pretty optimistic everyone's going to see Megan Bain's potential. And with how great the women's division is now, I don't think there's any way you get lost. There's so many people she can face, whether it's championship or not. So, yeah, I'm rooting for her. I'm definitely rooting for her. So, okay, up next we had Kyle Fletcher versus Mark Briscoe, where Kyle Fletcher defeated him. One of the most underrated rivalries in AEW is these two. I'll get this out of the way. I think this was a good match. This probably was the match I would have taken out. I don't know what it was, but at this point, for me personally, I was not feeling a quarterfinal match on this pay-per-view. And I think that affected my viewing of the match a little bit, because I was really like, are we really like stopping? It almost felt like we were stopping the show to do this. And it was a really good match. It might be to some people the match of the night, right? It was really good. But I just don't think I was as into it as I would have if it was, you know, Dynamite this Wednesday, right? Maybe if this was Statlander and Thunder Rosa in this spot. I'm trying to think. But I just don't think I was feeling three tournament matches. And I think some other matches on the night suffered a little bit from having three.
Yeah, I think if we're going to do this Dynasty thing going forward, maybe we just do the openers. You know, to open the tournament on the show.
Just and one then... women, one men's match. That's it.
Yep.
I don't think I would have done three. So did you feel the same a little? What was your mindset when this match hit?
I mean, the two of them have great matches. So I wasn't
It's an incredible rivalry.
Yeah. And it deserves to be on a pay-per-view maybe. But I mean, maybe it should have been on a pay-per-view as just a match instead of in the tournament. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But either way, I mean, they delivered. So I can't really complain. You know, like it.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of with you at this point. I was like, yeah, maybe this is, I did feel there was one too many tournament matches on the show. I will say that it did feel like it was a little overstuffed with tournament matches. Maybe there's not going to be the opportunity for that on TV because they're going to, you know, they have other stuff planned, but yeah, I'm not entirely certain, to be completely honest with you. So we'll have to see how that plays out in the future weeks to tell. Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine that there wasn't a reason for it. You know, like there's always a reason for why you do or don't do things in AEW. Tony Khan, like, spends hours thinking about these storylines, or at least he did at one point, you know, so.
I still think sometimes they're trying to figure out what's the perfect time to get out of the show. And I do think eventually they'll land on 11:30 and it's 3.5 hour shows. I think that is, that'll be the golden spot. But of course, there'll be some nights where the 4 hours works perfectly. So it's like a movie. You never know. 90 minutes can be perfect, or 2.5 hours, 3 hours can be perfect.
Literally.
Any notes you had from the match? I just thought it was really good, and the crowd was behind Mark Briscoe. Kyle Fletcher showed his shit again, right? Big Kyle Fletcher win. One of our pillars.
Yeah, the ref didn't want to let Mark Briscoe do his chair spot. That was pretty funny. The back suplex spot Mark took into the chair, just blah, blah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I like him kicking out of the Proto Buster, I'll be honest with you. I'm not sure if Kyle needs that right now, but, you know.
Fourth time wrestling him, I think sometimes you're going to stretch it a little bit more. Maybe in kayfabe, you're a little, that the moves don't hit as hard as you keep wrestling someone. Sure. I don't know. Yeah, maybe there's something to it.
Yeah, I don't know. Mark Briscoe just built different. But yeah, I know. It picks up the one with the turnbuckle brainbuster, solid spot for a finish, you know. Someone's going to die on that spot eventually. There's no way that shit's safe, you know. Like,
it should be. Yeah,
it's a good match. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. There was an avalanche brainbuster for the victory from Kyle. We have our title versus mask match for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Bandido takes on and defeats Chris Jericho. Whoa. Okay. So right away, we immediately tie into the emotional elements of the match, which are back-to-back matches from our pillars, by the way. Kyle Fletcher and Bandido. We've been tugging on the emotional angle with his family, whether it's Gravity, I want to say his mother and his sister is what they've been saying. And that's been kind of the core of this, is Jericho is making this personal. So, which is kind of nice. It makes the feud stand out a little more than just a generic, you know, I'm better than you. No, you're not. It's really personal. And I think that ended up working to the advancement of it. Something you pointed out, by the way, before the match, a video package. All the other luchadors talking about the importance of the mask. Fucking brilliant.
Oh, yeah, I agreed. I mean, obviously I said the point, but, you know, like, I said that because it's not something that you see.
No.
You don't see that in video packages of pro wrestling. You don't see them gather. Sometimes they will for, like, a big match, right? AEW's done this before. They usually do it for, like, the main events and stuff like that. When a big title change is about to happen, I'll give you an example. When Swerve was going into Dynasty last year to win the title, everything in the lead up to that match was, and his match with Danielson was, this guy's, it's his time. It's his time to win the title. So, you know, this to me feels like the same level of energy you're putting into that, which given what happens makes a lot of sense. But yeah, I just think that's a really great touch because it makes it feel like the Luchadors are united against Jericho in this mission he has to steal people's masks. Like they truly feel like they're being disrespected. And this, for the first time, this is one of the only times when it wasn't just a singular Luchador talking about it himself.
It wasn't.
Five different Luchadors or something like that, probably like four, but like three or four different Luchadors.
I believe everyone in the company was in there. We had Mortos there, Hologram, everyone.
Commander and Hologram were both there. I don't think Hologram said anything, but I'm sure. You know, he means, you know, the same thing, you know, same vibe, I'm sure.
Jalisco opened it. I can't remember hearing the guy's voice.
That's true. We probably have like once or twice, but like
just,
not much.
And it's just so cool, you know. And I thought it's one of those things they put their bullshit aside because a lot of those, you know, they
battle each other out because they want to be the best luchador in the world, 100%. But when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, they all have earned those masks. They've all gone through the trials and the tribulations it takes to earn that mask and become a luchador like they are. And so that's respect between all of them, even if they have even in their battles, that is respect that they would never, you know, it's a sanctity that they would never, you know, besmirch, to put it into certain words. Like, so seeing that emphasized right before this match added a dimension to it, I think.
Yeah. And the match itself was pretty solid. Yeah, I mean, Jericho's been doing pretty solid again lately. It's not the best match of the night, you know, but it was pretty solid. I thought some of the better stuff was him taking the camera and filming Bandito's family as they're crying, chanting for him. He's kicking his feet up in the corner. Shit like that. It's just so good. Commentary constantly reminding us of the 20 count was pretty funny. You know, if they busted out the please retire chants again, you guys kind of know how I feel about those. I just look, to me, it's a similar vibe to when they chant "you can't wrestle" at people. I just don't love it. But, you know, with Jericho plays into it, so I don't think he gets. I don't think it upsets Jericho.
There are people out there that will sit there and say they paid their ticket. They can say whatever they want. And yeah, sure, you can. Yeah.
Sure.
You still look like an asshole for doing it. Doesn't make you less of an asshole. You know, like,
yeah.
That's not how that works, you know?
So
you have freedom of speech. You also have to deal with what happens when you say things. You don't just get freedom from that, too, because you get freedom to speak.
Yeah. So it's just, I don't know. I was never a fan of the "you can't wrestle" chants, especially when they're chanting it at, you know, someone that's younger and trying to learn shit like that. It would always bug me a little bit. I'm like, really? Come on, like you're doing that to them. That's one of those chants that's like, it's just fucking, it's just disrespectful. But you know, it's just, I don't like that chant. I've never liked it, but you know, it is what it is. I know a lot of people don't like Jericho for a lot of reasons.
You think Jericho came here when he could have easily gone back to WWE and made tens of millions of dollars probably if he wanted to, and to do nothing basically except whatever he wanted to, and could deny any angle he doesn't want to work, you know?
Yeah,
you could have complete creative control probably in WWE even if you wanted to at this point. And he chose. You think he chose to come to the upstart company that nobody had any idea if it was going to be anything before he got there? You know, like,
come on, dude. It's always what he
wanted
to be
told to retire by the fans that he helped to garner in the first place. Like, this guy was the fucking first champion.
Yeah. And look, some of the Minute of New York segments were the drizzling shits, but it happens. It's still,
Jericho's,
you know,
had some bad segments. That doesn't mean you fucking tell him to retire. Jesus fucking Christ, have some motherfucking class.
Yeah. And what does Jericho always do so great? Well, he puts people over. And he did it here. He decked Bandito with a baseball bat. He actually got the win, which at the time I said, holy shit, I didn't think they had the balls to do that. They're going to unmask Bandito. Post-match, Aubrey Edwards, she wasn't the official in the match, but she was brought out there.
Can I just say, unless it's Paul fucking Turner, who is literally described as the lead official in AEW, don't be doing that. I'm not saying Aubrey shouldn't have the authority. Nothing is being said in that regard. If you want her to have that authority, though, you should probably just call her lead official. I don't think I'd have a problem with that either, you know? But why is this not Paul Turner walking out and making this decision? It should be the head referee or Tony Khan's fucking self that makes this call. Because there's no reason for it to be a random referee who wasn't in this match. Like,
yeah.
What?
Yeah. She was just out there at the time. She listened to the... She found the evidence. They said, fuck this. That Jericho pisses them off, too, so they restart the match.
The fact that it's stashed behind the steps does not mean he used it. What if he stashed it behind the steps, didn't use it, and then you found it there? Does that mean he's guilty?
It's based off word of mouth. Look, again, this, I believe, now, when I look at it like this, I believe the fact that Jericho is a heel and he's disrespectful to the refs anyways, I think that plays into it. I don't think they would necessarily would have done that had it been, you know, a babyface cheating for the victory. That's the way I look at it. I can totally understand how they can feel like, yeah, that's just coping. But that's just the way I'm looking at it. Because Jericho's an asshole to the fucking refs. He was multiple times during it, you know, during the match. They actually restarted the match, which I know there are people that have problems with referees having brains. Because, you know, for a long time, they never did. So I'm sure this inevitable will have a conversation about this. You'll see this online. People being like, oh, now the refs know this. I'm sure. Shivani did mention matches are not often restarted in AEW, but justice was served. Bandito celebrates with his mother. Reverse GTS, 21 plex for the victory. Bandito wins the Ring of Honor World Championship, Mr. Two Time. So, yeah. Jericho.
He has been banished to the Ring of Honor realm.
Yeah, that's, I'm, as someone,
I'm trying Bandito, so hard to not look at it that way. Is this when we get back into Ring of Honor and support a Bandito?
No, because the weekly's gonna suck still.
I mean, he might make it better.
Maybe I'll check out an episode if I hear he's on it and see if it's gotten any better, but.
Okay, sure. Maybe we'll plan to do that and we'll let everybody know before we do.
But, Jericho actually lost. He put over Bandito here, doing what he does best, putting over the new guys. So
Jericho got caught in the Jericho vortex so hard he got fucking thrown into another company.
Yeah. I'm worried about Bandito with that, but look, it's a Ring of Honor World Championship. This is the legacy of the title is incredible. So good for him. All right, I'm gonna let you take the lead.
Jericho
here.
Is the Canadian. Does it make it a polar vortex?
It might. Canada versus Mexico. Adam Cole defeats Danny Garcia. We have a new TNT champion. What did you think of this one?
I thought it was a really good match. I thought, you know, I thought going into this match, I was pretty sure Adam Cole was going to win. Which a lot of people, I don't think, were on that, to be honest with you. Like, I think a lot of people thought, oh, Danny's just getting into his, you know, his run here. But I don't think this was ever going to be a long run for Danny. I think this was establishing Danny as a champion and a star and so on and so forth. So, and I don't know where he goes from there. But I can tell you that Adam Cole, it's like I said on the, if you didn't listen to our prediction show, why I predicted this to be my winner was because after all this shit, after all the injuries, after all the Britt Baker drama, after all the, oh my God, he can't wrestle when he first gets back discourse, right? And all of that has finally been swept behind because of the good work that him and Roddy and Kyle have been doing over the last several months, right? They fucking finally eclipsed all that with this feud with Daniel Garcia, and they rewarded Adam Cole with a championship that he has probably deserved for a good period of time here in AEW. He probably should have won the world title at least once. Definitely at least once, but because then we could have avoided something else. But hey, we'll leave that for what it is, you know? that being said, I really enjoyed what they did here, Charlie. I think this was actually a really fun match to watch. I think it was at a point in the show where we needed to get things sort of back on track, and I think they really helped to do that with the way they paced this out. And it's not, I don't think it's the best match they had in these three that they had. I think the first one they had just fucking was awesome, you know, and the time limit draw was also really good, but for different reasons, you know. And I think this match capped it all off in a really good way. Let me go to some specific stuff here. The thing that really stood out to me here, Adam Cole did some S-tier selling of his previously injured leg here. I actually think that was basically the story of the whole match was Adam trying to battle back through all of that, you know? It actually made me think he might not win because of it, because it's really difficult to win a match when you have that kind of injury, especially with what his finisher is, right? So, ultimately Adam Cole does pull out the win here and becomes the new TNT champion. And I'm so excited to see what they do with this. Adam Cole on TV with a championship is going to be easy to sell. And I think I would not be surprised if he were the TNT champion that defended the title on TNT or TBS or whichever, you know, like, or Max, whatever, you know? So, yeah, what are your thoughts on this, Charlie? I really enjoyed this. I'm really excited to see what Adam Cole... Our fucking boy is champion, Charlie. Let's fucking go. Our boy beat our other boy. How do we feel? I don't know.
Really? Yeah. I mean, we'll talk about his title reign in a second. This was awesome, man. Straight up, this was really, really good. Cole, like you mentioned, selling the injury was good. And I think this was the moment of the night because the crowd didn't seem to care about the Jericho Bandito thing other than just giving Jericho shit, right? Which is fine. It happens. But the crowd was a little dead, right? You got to bring it back. Which also caters to the theory. Because at this point, it was before this match when we were talking about maybe they should have cut something. And I think we kind of both landed on the third cup match. But it was like at this point, the crowd shouldn't be feeling like this right now. Because there's still banger matches to go. And these guys went out there. They did the damn thing. I thought they brought a lot of hard hitting to this. They played around their strengths, especially with Daniel. The crowd loves Daniel. The crowd loves Adam Cole. And yeah, he lowered the boom, won the title. He offered to shake Daniel's hand. He accepted it, gave Cole the ring, and he was heartbroken. Really, really solid stuff. This is their third match now. Fourth if we're counting the 2023 one, but most people don't really mention that one because it was so long ago. And yeah, they've delivered every single time. And let's talk about this because to date, the TNT Championship has been so back on track thanks to Christian Cage, of course. When he resurrected this thing
and
from the depths of hell.
And also, shout out Luchasaurus, because he did phenomenal work with
that
thing,
too. That's a part of it. That whole thing resurrected this title. And then Adam Copeland did his thing, which catered into Jack Perry having a really good title reign, which catered into Daniel Garcia having a fantastic title reign. 134 days. He was the 14th champion, 14th person to hold the belt. Adam Cole is the 15th person to hold the belt. And he wins the title off Jack Perry at Full Gear. Awesome match. Immediately jumps into the C2. And it's like, okay, let's see what you can do. How are we going to build this championship through a tournament where the title's not on the line? And they played into that a lot. That played into his motivations. That played into a lot of things in the ring. He defended his title January 4th against Mark Briscoe. That was the Bojangles Coliseum one in North Carolina. Awesome, awesome match. Fight for the Fallen, I believe that was. Oh, what do? We're going to defend it next week against Shibata. Yeah, and that was awesome. 3 weeks later, on a three-way, he's defending against Kyle O'Reilly and Lee Moriarty. Awesome stuff. All on Collision. The TNT Championship was centered around Collision. And I think this is one of those decisions that they've talked about. We're not going to say that these guys are on one brand, right? They're not going to do a brand split. You don't have to fucking do that. Daniel Garcia can show up on Dynamite. But they've made a lot of the TNT title stuff more on Collision. Well, there's some feuding going on with his group and the Undisputed Kingdom. And he eventually wrestles Adam Cole in a no contest. March 1st. The following week, Lee Moriarty in an awesome match. And then 2 weeks after that, Adam Cole time limit draw, and then we got to here. Duke, we've often talked about when you give some guys that we believe in, and this is not just because, just because we believe in them, but we often put our fucking eggs in some baskets because, you know, we see one way or another, and
pause.
So far with Orange Cassidy, it felt like we were proven pretty right with that. And then Daniel Garcia, we're like, just give him a chance, man. Give him a chance. Whether it's the C2, nah, fuck that. It's a championship run. I don't think he could have done any better. Meaningful feuds, meaningful matches, multiple storylines. that interweaved with each other. This doesn't even count the Jay Lethal match on the Jericho Cruise, which I'm sure was awesome. But yeah, what do you think of our boys' title reign? 134 days. So this wasn't just some fart in the wind like Venom would say.
Yeah, exactly.
Like a turd in the wind.
Indeed. Mrs. Chen solos. I got to say, I'm impressed that Danny was able to garner this kind of reign at this stage in his career. He's really not really accomplished anything to this point, not to be a dick, but I'm just being honest. You know what I mean? Like, so
in terms of gold, like, no, it's just been BWG, really.
Yep. It's been, so this is monumental for his career. I don't expect this to be the last thing he does. Maybe even this year, we could see him do more stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure what his trajectory will be after this, so I'm excited to see what that's like. I'm sure him and Matt Menard will get back into the, you know, into the think tank. Maybe a trios run for him in 2.0 is on the table here, because we've always talked about them having a serious trios run could definitely be good for business. So I don't know. We'll see what the future holds for our boy. But I really enjoyed his run as the TNT champion. I thought it was really solid. And I think it shows how much respect that Tony Khan has for this young whippersnapper who used to be one of our pillars, a graduated pillar.
The graduated pillar. And can I'm going to throw this out there. I don't really love him with 2.0 as a trio, but you know who I love him with? And I just think they're looking for some sanctuary too. That's Private Party. I mean, why not? Just do it. It fits what we were talking earlier, a great tag team with a great single star, almost the perfect combo. Him and Isaiah Cassidy, they have so much chemistry together. Mark Quinn, obviously, too. So it's just like, yeah, I'm really excited to see where he goes. And I'm happy we had such a good title reign. I will take a good title reign ending all day over a shit title reign. It doesn't fucking matter. I will take it all day. So that's just where I view wrestling. Like, I just give me this all day. Yes, the guy I fucking root for so hard lost the belt. It is what it is. It's a, you know, just it's the way wrestling goes, guys. You don't have to have 2,000-day title reigns. It's okay.
You do if you're the big dog.
He deserves it. Who are we kidding? I can't wait till we get the Roman Reigns New Japan run, and we'll leave it at that. Up next, we have a three-way match.
You can't wait till we get the big dog versus the war dog.
Dude, you know that match would kick ass.
I mean, yeah.
Come on. War. We have a triple threat match with Kenny Omega, Ricochet, and
Big Dog
versus Mike
versus
Bailey.
War Dog versus Stone Pitbull. Battle of the Dogs.
And then you get Brody King in there too.
Yes, Battle of the Barks.
And then you toss in Bron Breakker because he's barking also. Fucking all of them.
Oh, hell yeah. Battle of the
they're
Barks.
They're all barking.
Now we're just making a trios match.
So this match was unbelievable. The triple threats in AEW, especially with Ricochet, are just so fucking good. This was awesome. 30 plus minutes. This could look, and it didn't even feel like that. The crowd was just absolutely loving this match. They were on their floors. They were playing into the Ricochet thing so much. Speedball. He looked so good. Duke, what were some of your thoughts on this one? I think this will be like on all the charts. Everyone's picking their match of the night. It'll be this one. It was so fucking good, man.
I gotta tell you, there were moments in this match that I thought Speedball might actually win, dude. I was out of my gourd on this one, dude. It was so much fun. We had fucking crazy stuff happening. But you know what the best spot of the night was? When when Kenny Omega and Speedball both saw the bald head in front of them on the floor and they said, let's slap that shit. Slap the bald.
God, Ricochet is so good at this character. He plays it.
I have said this multiple times now. I had a vision in my head for what Ricochet could be that was better than what he'd done, that was kind of more in line with his black and gold NXT style, right? And I always referenced a few with Velveteen, even though Velveteen, obviously, fuck Velveteen Dream, obviously, don't endorse that guy. But just what they were doing in that feud, what he was doing in that feud, specifically Ricochet, always really stood out to me, that he actually had a little bit more than what they ever used him on the WWE main roster. He is so much better than I could have ever imagined. It's unbelievable. And he does things that I couldn't have even thought. Like, I thought in my head, okay, he'll be good, but he'll have to, like, learn certain things. He knew these things. They weren't letting him do them. I don't understand what it was the WWE thought they were going to do with this guy. But they just, I really don't understand it. It's mind-boggling to me that this, you had this guy losing to some of the weirdest people and not being on show. It's mind-blowing to me. Because look, AEW made out like fucking bandits for this. Like, it's absurd that they let this guy walk out and just become one of the biggest stars in the other company. It's insane to me.
He knows exactly how to get the crowd reacting to him too. There are so many moments in this match, mainly with Mike Bailey, whether it was the headset thing or just the unbelievable athletic ability that they were showing in the ring. We can go on beat for beat about all that shit, but there's other stuff. Everyone watched the match. You know what happened. But we like to talk about our favorite stuff that happened. And
Kenny Omega was aura farming.
He was. The Daniel LaRusso kick, dude. The crane pose. And Ricochet. Dude, that's not going to work on me. I've seen the move. Boom. It was so good. The ultimate weapon. Omega hits the V-trigger. Dude. Avalanche one-winged angel on Ricochet. Bailey was trapped in the trio. Whoa. Omega gets the pin. So fucking good. Post-match, the coin drop hits. Okada comes out with his continental title. They stare down again, and it's just like, so good. I think so many seeds have been planted for All In. When I mentioned that, I'm not trying to say the company's looking past Double or Nothing or anything like that. I just really think All In is going to, they want that to be the show where the biggest stories of the year all combined. It just really feels to me like what they try and do so often, right? And
it's the best way I can put it to people that watch WWE mostly, and like they're getting into AEW, and you're like, maybe you happen to be listening to this show because you're like a super fan, right? The way I could put it to you is like this. In WWE, the Mania cycle is basically a three-month cycle. The month before, the month after, and the month of Mania are basically all about Mania. This is the same thing, except just a little bit stretched out further because AEW does longer-term booking than WWE on a general basis.
And All Out's the following fucking week.
So when we start planning this far out, some of these matches we're planting seeds for will not be taken care of till All Out. It will feel like they took forever to get there. We did it last year. It paid off and it worked. And Swerve ended up having an insane main event in that show, I'm pretty sure, you know? Or at least an insane match, whatever. It may not have been in the main event, but whatever it was, right? And so that being, you know, with that being said, it's just a different way of doing things. It's not the way that AEW is, you know. AEW is not going to wait until a month out from All In to start poking All In. That's just, we can't afford to do that. There's too much on the line. It's too big of a show. Too much money. You can't do that.
And a lot of these,
can afford to do that because you can have both months. And that's why like the pay-per-views like Roadblock, while cool, can kind of be a little bit weird sometimes in WWE and not really mean anything because they're just a literal roadblock on the way to another show that isn't supposed to advance things too much, but can add a little bit of intrigue going into the next show. This is not that. AEW is giving both time to Dynasty to breathe. It's going to give time to Double or Nothing to breathe, and All In will,
which is also going to be a big show. That's going to be kind of their rumble in a way.
100%.
Because we know the contenders for the championship. So there is some comparisons to people that are new. That's a good way of bringing that up. So there is some comparisons. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
And look, I mean, and storylines maybe we have been caught on, it's not necessarily going to happen.
Yeah.
Right. So what have been some of the main ones we've said? It's been Swerve versus Hangman.
Mm-hmm.
It's been FTR versus Edge and Christian.
Yep.
It's been Athena versus Mercedes.
Yep.
The one big dream one because of the Styles clash is always like, well, is Ospreay going to face Styles? Is Styles going to do a quick little, you know, maybe half a year run in AEW?
Yep.
Who knows? You know, there's always these kind of things that we can point to. And then one of the other ones, of course, being Omega Okada.
Yes.
So it feels like, now that doesn't mean it's going to be that. It's just, you know, what do they say?
That's kind of the brilliant thing about long-term booking. You could decide 3 months into your 6-month plan that it's actually a 3-month plan.
And there's some crazy shit we're about to talk about. So what does this mean? What does this mean for the show? What
and
does
you this can mean decide for... 3 months into your 1 month plan that it's actually a 6 month plan. You know what I'm saying? Like where it's like you're like, actually month two, we can do this. Month three, yeah, or we're here. Oh, should we end it here? No, let's keep going. Let's keep it rolling.
Yep. Okay. Here we go. We have completely contained our thoughts on this until the end, so let's fucking do it. We have Jon Moxley, Swerve Strickland, main event, AEW Dynasty. One of the biggest nights in AEW's history.
One of the biggest crash outs in Blue Sky's history.
Jon Moxley, this has been the first time I've ever seen a unanimous, like, anywhere. It can be YouTube, Blue Sky. I've even seen it a little bit on Facebook somehow, okay? People don't like Jon Moxley's title reign. And we're not here to sit here and be like, well, this is why you should. No, no, no. It's not what we're going to do.
But, no, I'm here for that. I made it my storyline of the year last year. That's what I'm here for.
No, but there's a lot of people that they're really passionately against that. So, Jon Moxley defeats Swerve Strickland. Oh, shit! For starters, okay? Just on paper? What the holy shit? Let's go through some of this match. Let's talk about what happens after. And there's a couple things I want to bring up during the match. Because there is one thing that happened that I'm absolutely heartbroken about, okay? There's one thing. We'll get to that in a second. Match starts. Swerve's got his Static Shock. He's got this theme with his entrance. Really cool stuff. I'm loving the DC references we're getting within AEW. I think those, if DC becomes really successful again in terms of the mainstream media, because, like, yes, Superman, Batman, they're always going to be in the zeitgeist, right? But if it can hit those levels of just being super like into it, I want AEW to be ingrained in that. You like these movies, you can like wrestling. It's all fun. That's what this is all about. We get big fight intros, and they get in there, and they're chain wrestling right away. Okay, it didn't last for too long. Eventually, they start beating the shit out of each other with forearms. Chicanery happens with what's her name? Oh my God. Marina. Nana gets involved. There's a whole lot of shit going on. Okay. Match is doing its thing. It's a slower paced Moxley match. Most people are 5 hours into a show. Probably not hitting for him at that point, right? Slower pace. But we have Swerve who's getting bloodied up. Moxley's getting a little crazy or doing this, that. It's going pretty decent to me until this point. Well, eventually, shit's got to go down, okay? Moxley goes for a cutter, takes out Shafir. Oh, shit. Well, Strickland drops him with a paradigm shift. He goes through a Spanish table in some really big, you know, the swerve stomp through the Spanish table. Some stuff happens to get to when we get over there. Moxley goes to the leg.
It was awful ladder too. We should emphasize that.
Yes, it was a really badass moment. This all feels like we're heightening up to a massive Swerve victory. That's what this all feels like. Well, Paul Turner gets clobbered. Strickland hits a vertebraker. Hangman Adam Page walks to the ring. Couldn't decide on who to hit with the buckshot lariat. Moxley or Strickland? Can you believe that's even a fucking question? Holy shit. Okay, more on that in 2 seconds. Death Riders appear. Attack Hangman. He sidestepped the Busaiko knee from Yuta. Hit Castagnoli. Pack was sent outside. He drops Moxley with a dead eye. The ops ran out. Brawled with the Death Riders to the back. We were literally just talking about the ops like 5 minutes before this match started. It was fucking hilarious. It's really, really good timing. Strickland chucked a chair into the face of Moxley. He goes up top, hits the swerve stomp. His knee was badly damaged. There's no ref. The lights go out.
Just not to completely derail, but like we talked about them in reference to them going for the trios titles, even so, yes. which was even funnier. Yep. You know, which is probably what the plan is after this.
Makes sense to me. Lights go out. They come back on. The Young Bucks holding Strickland by the arms. BTE trigger. Moxley crawls over, gets the cover and the pin. The Bucks leave through the crowd. Moxley recovers with Marina. Swerve is staring down the Bucks. Paige is staring down Strickland to end the show. Let me touch on the one thing I'm heartbroken about. Okay? Hangman Adam Page helped Swerve Strickland, and he still lost the match. I personally would have saved that moment. Okay? Personally, that's just me. I would have saved that. If he helped Swerve, I would have had him win. Okay? I thought the match was awesome. Result, on paper, heartbroken. But you, how, what did we mention earlier? If you're going to do something that's going to break the hearts of the audience, you have to add a layer of intrigue to keep us even more interested. The fucking Young Bucks helped Moxley? What does this mean? Oh my God. Absolute insanity. I was losing my shit. That is something. If I would have wrote down so many things, I don't know how long it would have taken until I got to the Young Bucks helping Moxley beat Strickland.
You know what? Something's funny. I've meant to say to you like a couple of different days now, like 2 weeks in a row, I meant to say, man, when are the Young Bucks coming back? And I'm not just saying that because they came back tonight, to be clear to everybody. I did have this thought, but in my mind, they were so like not mentioned. I was like, they're probably just taking some time off. I didn't even think about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
and even during the show, we were talking about, because I kept making the case of there's a lot of people that are not wrestling tonight that are going to be wrestling at Double or Nothing or are All In. And the Young Bucks were a part of that. It was like they're some of the biggest stars in the company. They're not here. You know, so I think we're going to see a lot of change happening before All In. Well, holy shit. This adds a layer of intrigue that was desperately needed. Now, while I am personally sad about the Hangman Page thing, with him finally helping Swerve to not have him win, breaks my heart a little bit. Not something I would have done.
Do you know what I think this does do, though? Just to maybe change your mind a little bit. This is the completion of Hangman Page's return to the light.
Yep.
This moment signifies, regardless of what happens, his intentions were good. He was there to help Swerve. That is not something that the Hangman Page of even 2 weeks ago would have done.
Yep.
So.
You deserved it. I know.
What I can't.
That was it.
Unfortunately, we won't have a podcast to talk about it this week, but unless we end up.
Well, we're going to be talking about that segment.
It's going to be one of our favorites is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Got it.
It's not, it's going to be fucking talked about.
We'll mention it because we always mention the highlight stuff on the double shows. What a great segment that was.
This shifts around All In a little bit in my mind. Okay. Because what do you think about Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland facing the Young Bucks?
I would be really into that. I hope that's what happens. It'd be a phenomenal way to unite them as a team. Hangman Page has needed a new tag partner. I don't think Kenny's going back to the tag division, you know?
Let's backtrack a little bit here. Those were all my thoughts. What did you think of all of this? You have the match here, all the shenanigans that were afoot, the Young Bucks, all of this. I'm sure everyone's really, because we've held it close to the chest. We haven't talked about 100%. It at all this show.
100%.
What did you think of all this? We're about an hour and a half removed now.
Yes. I am obviously devastated that Swerve Strickland did not win the second of his many that he will win world championships in AEW. But as you mentioned, the fact that we got something to chew on out of this is the most important thing, because we have a smattering of pay-per-views. We got a bunch of pay-per-views coming up in short order in the next couple months. So we have to make content that's going to be intriguing for that. And we also have to fill 4 episodes of television a month. So, or actually really 8, you know what I mean? So, you know, like.
And we're getting into the summer when wrestling's the hottest.
Yes. And so while I disagree with the idea of just shelving somebody like Bandido, maybe this is why, because you're shifting the playing cards around a little bit. You're moving the chess pieces across the board a little bit. You're spreading it out. And if that's the case, if we're bringing back some of the more, you know, I guess to call them name brand talent for the bigger shows, then it makes sense to do a little bit of shifting like this. I would never have guessed that Swerve wasn't winning this championship. It felt like it was almost meant to be in a lot of ways, you know. But the way that they went about doing it, I don't know. I'm just willing to see AEW out. And I just got to say, if you're one of the people crashing out of the timeline right now, just take a breath. Relax. It will be okay. Tune into Dynamite Wednesday, and you will be fine. But
I can totally understand if you're a massive Swerve fan being upset, but now you just got to kind of Now look at this.
Someone check on that guy that said he's watching all 3 hours of Raw, Swerve loses.
Yeah, oh Jesus. Oh no. Yeah, no, but you know, it's one of those things. Look at what this could mean, right? And maybe this level, because I'm telling you right now, we would not be saying what we're saying right now if Claudio and Pac just interrupting and beating up Nana and Swerve was the reason he lost. I do not think of the vibe that we have right now would be that. But when you talk about the Young Bucks and Moxley, wait, they just did the whole EVP things and they let Moxley run. What does this mean? Yeah, I don't know. I think this was really done well to me. I'm not going to say I'm more excited.
Someone should check this and still good luck, because you got like probably 3 to 5 to 10 hours of promo time to cut through to potentially to get the answer to this. I wonder if he's ever mentioned anything about the EVPs or the Young Bucks in any of his promos. If they had managed to not plant that, like to essentially reverse plant that seed by not mentioning them, to essentially highlight them by not highlighting them, if you will.
Yeah, I mean, they never went after them. Remember, they yes, ran.
They dipped. As soon as the Death Riders showed up, they dipped out. Exactly. And they never wanted anything to do with it. I'm just curious. I wonder if in those first couple promos, because they were still around, if he mentioned them, because it would make sense, because that was just the storyline that we had ended, was the EVPs running amok, right? So did they not think about it enough for this to potentially be a thing down the line? Not that I'm saying that you should have been thinking that far ahead, but I'm saying, like, you know, is that something that we can then claim it retroactively, kind of like the Jericho 8 titles, 8 defenses, 88 days thing? You know, is it like one of those situations again, or like they just never, we never realized it, but the seeds were there the entire time?
We've been talking so much about the long-term storytelling in AEW. I think we're going to see now more and more of the Bucks joining Mox. Dude, this is probably something that's been in the bag for a long time. I mean, maybe it is still Darby Allin that's going to beat Mox. What if we're looking at a world now where, and I'm just going to throw this out there, because the pre-show was sucking off Ospreay so much. But in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, you can. Everyone's always going to say who the top guy is. It's still going to be Hangman winning this fucking cup. Hold on a minute. My predictions changed. I got Ospreay winning at All In, or winning at Double or Nothing now to go to All In. I almost feel more confident following this main event that it's going to be Ospreay versus Mox. And now I'm thinking Ospreay's going to fucking lose to him. I don't see this ending anytime soon. This is going to go much longer than I think it's going to. I could totally be wrong. Swerve might win at Double or Nothing, and I'm willing to acknowledge that. We're just fucking fantasy booking here. But I do think there's a chance. We're talking, you know, Wrestle Dream, this motherfucker still got the belt, okay? I am not ruling that out anymore, because A, I didn't think they had the balls to do this, right? I didn't think they did. And
you didn't think they had the balls.
And that's a good thing and a bad thing, sure. And there's going to be a lot of people that are very, very upset about Swerve losing. And I totally understand that. I am too. But I'm just trying to look at this as a different light. Like, what can we take from this? Because I think it was after the Daniel Garcia match, we were kind of having a discussion in between before the Kenny Omega match, like, you know, tonight just hasn't had a lot of intrigue. We had FTR and we had Bowen's return. But that's for going on to next week. That's kind of been it. And it felt like that was a little bit of an issue. And I was going to see how I felt at the end of the night. Well, when you have an angle like this, dude, I'm just impressed, because I didn't see it coming at all. I fucking loved it. Oh, I'm a little scared. It's been, I was looking at social media a little bit before the show. I mean, we cut our show like within 10 minutes of the show ending, and the reactions were kind of scary. People were losing their shit a little bit. I have no idea if it's weathered out now. I have no idea. But this feels like
Andretti got into a fist fight backstage. We're not watching the what's it called? The scrum.
Yeah. But yeah, AEW, look, it's been hot again. I think you're going to have a lot of people crashing out, and that's all right. Hey, look. Hey, and let's also say, that's not a bad thing. That just means you love this shit, all right? We've all been there in wrestling. We've all been there. Every single one of us that loves wrestling has had something happen that absolutely upset the shit out of us. So, I guess any other closing thoughts you had on the night and just thoughts on Dynasty in general? And, yeah, what do you got for us?
I had a lot of fun watching Dynasty. It was a blast. There was a lot of really great moments. There were shocking moments. There were moments that I was really excited to see and potential that we could see out of people like Julia Hart. It just really feels like they're set for, like, infinite potential, you know? And I think this is an opportunity for AEW fans to do a little self-reflection and say, why am I reacting so strongly to this? It's because, like you said, you care about this shit as much as you ever did if you were ever a Fed fan, or if you were a fan of WCW or TNA or whatever promotion got you into this fucking business. You know, like, just take a few minutes and think, am I overreacting a little bit? Because I think it's going to be really funny to watch how within like a month of John Moxley's title reign ending, how everyone talks about how important he is to AEW again. You know, not that they ever stop, but that's the constant discourse about John Moxley whenever he's not in the main event is how great he is for AEW. So, and how much of a representative of AEW he is, you know? So like, I don't know. I'm fully expecting it to go that way. And maybe, just maybe, and this is going to sound really bold to say while everyone's still feeling it tonight, but maybe, just maybe, John Moxley has something in his bag, not the world title necessarily, but something in his bag that we don't know about yet that's going to take this thing to a next level. We just hit that, like, next, you know, step in that direction. We don't know. You know, sometimes you just got to let it cook. And if it starts cooking a little bit and it smells like shit, I'll let you know. I'll be the first to do it. So, you know, that's my final closing thoughts on this show.
And the Bucks tried to take over AEW and they failed, right? They ultimately failed. They got scared. They left. They ran. They tucked their tails, left Jack and Okada behind.
They took their ball and they went home.
And they fucking ran. This is all going to make sense. So, yeah. Other than that, I don't think the all-in card will be drastically different, other than if it's not, I guess it will. I mean, because I do think John Mox is going to be the world champion now at all-in, so I'd be a little surprised if he wasn't. But that all depends on how quick they do another swerve match. Like, you know, I don't know. We have to wait and see. That's the fun of it all. That's the intrigue of it all. This has been a lot of fun, guys. I hope a lot of people enjoyed this, and I hope maybe you came to our show knowing we weren't just going to be sitting here thinking this was the worst thing ever and draining on it.
This is a good show for you guys to leave comments on. If you are on Spotify or you're on one of the platforms that allows you to leave comments, let us know how you're feeling and be completely honest with us. If you think we are smoking some fucking dick here and that we're actually not representing what you as an AEW fan feel, well, for one, this is all subjective at the end of the day. But two, let us know what you're feeling. I'm more than happy to talk about that stuff on the next episode of the show that we do, because it is a worthwhile conversation to have, because I think we should acknowledge when other AEW fans aren't feeling things the same way we are, because it's valid as much as when we say we're enjoying it. So I think it's definitely a worthwhile conversation to have. And just let us know what you think of the show overall, because just that one thing doesn't ruin the show for you. And if it does, I don't know if you were liking the show that much to begin with, because it was a phenomenal show overall, and it didn't, you know, one match cannot derail a phenomenal pay-per-view unless it's just the drizzling shits.
Yeah. And, that would be fun to see. I'm always loving to see what some people are thinking about the product, especially. So yeah, I look forward to our show. So our next show, guys, will be, I mean, depending on when you're listening to this, about a week from today. So we're going to have a full stuff in our feeds about what all just happened. We are live skeeting the show, of course, a little bit of blue sky posts here and there. So excited for Anthony Bowen. So expect some posts throughout the week on that. At Bane Duke, at O'Charlie with an X instead of an A is where you can find us on there. We're always open to chatting. You know, you ever have anything you want to talk about? We're always open to chatting. We love it. And yeah, so There was that one point I did want to finish. And I was going to say, even if we absolutely hated it, you knew coming to our show, because this is how we talk about stuff. We weren't going to sit here for 40 minutes talking about how this is the death of the company, the worst thing we've ever seen. We'd talk about it. We'd say it didn't work for us. We'd give our reasons why, and we'd move on. That's just how we do stuff. That's just, you know, that's the whole point of our show.
This is when everyone starts pointing to the 2023 World's End review where we were crashing out hard about JY.
Yeah, we crashed out and we moved on. We gave our reasons why, moved on, you know? So people are going to see this, be like, oh my God, they talked for an hour and 30 minutes on a pay-per-view. What happened? I hope you enjoyed the show, guys. Seriously.
It's more what didn't happen than what happened.
Didn't happen. Anyways, thank you so much for supporting our show just by listening to us. We appreciate it. And we'll catch you guys next week on a normal episode of Eat, Sleep, Elite. Take care, everyone.
Oh shit, Wardo!